Pickaxe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Triforce Podcast. That's right, I'm here. I'm joined by Pyrinflax.
Howdy.
You don't even remember what number it is, do you?
And also Sips. I don't have any idea. No.
102.
It's 102. Yeah.
Wow.
Feels like it should be like 106 or 107 by now.
Yeah.
We've taken a little break over summer, haven't we?
So it's a summer break.
You guys have had some little trips away.
Yeah,
I've had a really busy summer.
It's been exciting. I went to Gamescom, went to Germany.
How was Gamescom? Oh, yeah.
Gamescom was fine. I've been loads of times. I like Gamescom. I like Germany. I like the people. I like Cologne.
I've not been to Cologne yet.
It's okay. It doesn't seem like a busy, mega sprawling city too much. It's like kind of fairly condensed in the center. You know, it's nice. It's got quite a market, really. There's lots of nice little shops and stuff.
I enjoyed a cigar lounge at the hotel I stayed in last time I was in Cologne. It was nice. They had a woman working in the cigar lounge. There's nobody in there every time we went by. So I guess she just stands around, waits for people to sample some cigars. And we went in and it was with Hat Films and they ordered a bunch of Phillies. They were like €1 each.
What is a Philly?
A cheap ass cigar.
It's just like a cheap ass cigar. Yeah.
Philly as in Philadelphia.
No, as in you eat it and it fills you right up.
Yeah, you eat it. No, like, and she had the little tool to cut the cigar, and it was great. It was like all properly ventilated and everything. We were smoking cigars. It's really nice.
The only time you ever see that fucking cigar tool used is to threaten people to chop their fingers off in gangster movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It has two uses, finger threatening and cigar cutting.
But I feel like I've seen it more used for the finger thing. than anything else.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was part of it.
Yeah, you don't see people smoking cigars much anymore.
It's because they're fucking gross. Like, I mean, even if you're... When I was a big smoker, I'd have cigars occasionally because, you know, you thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But you can't inhale them or anything. You just get the smoke in your mouth for the flavor. But if you inhale them, like, no one can actually inhale a cigar. It's far too toxic.
The flavor is so fucking... It hurts your mouth.
Yeah.
Like, it's so strong.
You can feel the cancer in your mouth. That's how bad it is.
It is like sucking on an exhaust pipe.
Yeah,
it's rough.
It's a weird thing.
I remember the first time I had a cigar, I was really young, you know, and obviously, you know what you're like when you're a kid, you're fucking around with a cigar and you just breathe that stuff in.
Okay.
And it was like, oh boy. I remember when I was a kid and we were like hanging out in the park, we wanted to be all cool and like adults. And so we rolled up some pieces of A4 paper and just lit the end. And breathed in the smoke. It was
nice.
Like that, you know?
Nice.
It was like...
Wow.
It was like that. Just horrid.
I bet it's...
So the A4 paper, we used an aerosol can and just pierced the bottom.
Oh my God.
We inhaled that. That was...
Yeah, nice.
What was in the aerosol? Jesus Christ.
Shaving foam. Like
just Lynx Deodorant. Africa.
Yeah, it was Lynx.
I bet if you were in a group of kids and you were smoking this fucking piece of A4 paper that you'd lit and you were obviously about to be sick from inhaling pure smoke, someone would be like, hey, pass that round. You know, trying to be cool. Your turn. I remember the first time I pinched some of my mum's cigarettes and smoked one. And I thought I was going to die. The head rush was so intense. I just like... took a big hit because you think you're cool. And my body was like, oh my God, what is this? And I literally was rolling around on the floor, thought I was going to puke. Everyone was so bad.
Yeah. You get really dizzy and stuff.
Oh
like
my
the very first cigarette you have is pretty rough. I remember the first time we ever smoked, we managed to get somebody to buy us a pack of cigarettes because that used to be like the done thing.
Yeah.
Hang around outside a convenience store. Wait for people like
wait for
going
an irresponsible
in.
Adults.
Yeah, yeah. You're always looking for like a disheveled looking dad who is on his own. Somebody that you could just be like, hey man, can you buy me a pack of cigarettes?
Sure thing.
Gotta give him the money and he'd go in and buy you a pack. So we managed to get a pack of cigarettes and we went out to this it was like behind a high school, but it wasn't a full forest. It was kind of like a field with, you know, like a few trees and bushes and stuff like that. And that's the
kind of
the
place
first
you
place.
Could have a portage.
Well, yeah, kind of portage. But that's the first place that we ever smoked cigarettes and got drunk as well.
Right.
And it was just,
how did you refer to this area? Because it would have had a coded reference.
Well, we didn't really use it again. It was just this random spot, sort of out of the way, where
very clever
couldn't be seen from like the road or anything like
that. Once you've burnt a location, you can't go back there.
There was like there were like 20 of us too. It was crazy. It was just we used to. I don't know. Like, I guess the older you get, you sort of narrow your friends down into like a tighter knit group. But at the time, we just had this massive posse that, and everybody was just going to this field with armed with alcohol that we managed to convince somebody to buy for us, and cigarettes that we managed to convince somebody to buy for us. And it was really fun. Everybody got sick, and actually looking back, it was pretty miserable, but we felt like real men.
It's one of those rites of passage things, you know?
Yeah.
It's a thing.
That's right.
Like, having a giant posse is a problem because you don't trust anyone, even if like no one does like tell on you. Do you know what I mean? You still don't trust everyone. You know, it's like once you've whittled your group down to like a small enough gang, you can believe that they'll all like, you know, stand behind you, you know, or whatever. Or at least they won't like, you know, the unwritten rules just like take shape, you know. Whereas if you've got like a big bunch of like 20 guys, like, God, there's always going to be that kid who's just like the mummy's boy, or has to bring his little brother along or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be like,
the fucking snitch. Like
that one who will just, you know, is just going to tell because he's like the kid of a teacher or something. You know, it's going to get back to them, you know?
Like, yeah, I think maybe that's part of the whittling process, is knowing who you can trust. Because if you're going to do stupid shit with your friends, right? But you don't want to do stupid shit with 20 or 30 people, because then it's mob rule. Even your own friends will have to throw you under the bus to save face in the face of the mob.
Oh, yeah.
It's mob rule. But once you're a small enough group, you know you can fuck up and it'll just be amongst your mates. They're not going to run off and tell all and sundry, because they get enough fun out of teasing you in a small group of people, which is bearable. Being humiliated in front of 30 people is life-changingly humiliating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So a small group, you can deal with it, because you're all going to fuck up and it's a laugh. You can laugh with and at each other. But in a large group, oh no, that's it. That's why I think that the first few weeks of a new school are such a crucial period, because if you fuck up, that's you for the rest of the 6 years at that school. That's what you're going to be known for, is whatever it is you did in that first week.
You're tarred with that for life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could it be?
So you're never going to shake that like reputation.
God forbid you accidentally pee in your pants or something.
Oh my God.
Like that. You'll never live that one down. That one will follow you.
You'll be PD piss pants in no time.
PD.
They'll just call you piss
pants.
Oh, piss. Yeah. That's it. What's your nickname at school? Piss.
Piss pants.
Piss pants.
Fucking stinky ass.
Sometimes that stuff just sticks to you for your whole life, though. Like, you know, Perian flax.
Hey. There was a kid in my school. He was shunned purely because he lived on the same road as the school. Once we found that out, no one wanted to know him.
My God. Jeez. There was always a couple of people that sort of had a raw deal at school, right? Like, they just didn't wear like the right clothes, or they didn't fit in, or, you know, they just had personality traits that people picked up on quickly and mocked and made fun of or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a really weird thing, isn't it? Like, being a child and growing up and going through school and stuff. Like, I remember we had this friend, he was like, and looking back, like, you feel kind of bad, but like at the time we were really mean to him. Like, his dad had left his mom and moved away, like far away or whatever. And I guess he was taking it pretty bad,
right?
But we didn't really, like, you know,
help him.
We were like 10, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like, what, like, we didn't know like what to say or do, or I don't even think it registered with most of us or whatever. And so we turned up to school one day, and we always like, we walked to school. So we turn up like pretty early and just like hang around in the playground or whatever, waiting for like the bell to go in. And I guess like he was taking it particularly bad this morning. And like he'd written a song about how much he missed his dad and sang it to us.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And fuck, it was so awkward. Even then. Really awkward.
God.
But man, we fucking made fun of him so much. Like, for the rest of school, like, this went on for years. Like, every time we saw him, we'd start singing the song and stuff. And it's like,
that is so tragic.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But like, how do you know? How do you know like any different when you're 10?
Yeah, you're a kid.
Yeah.
Your peers are just as stupid as you.
It's like, I don't know. I guess we, as humans, we do it to sort of like, I don't know, like gain some social standing with other people or whatever, like belittling one person. Like it's like the worst thing that you can do.
It's horrible.
But kids do it all the time.
Every school and every kid does it. It's true.
Yeah.
They all fucking
It's crazy. It is crazy.
The kids,
my kids
went back to school today, which is a merciful break from 6 weeks of... I mean, honestly, they were pretty good. I mean, you know, I was away for quite a bit of the time as well. We had YogCon and TI and stuff like that. So I was away for like half of the summer, I guess, more or less. But honestly, it is, you know, you can see that they're starting to lack structure in their days and they need to socialize with other kids. And they were both really happy.
The sass starts to build up, right?
Yeah.
They start to get stroppy and sort of like sassy.
They
like
do.
A lot more sassy near the end of the vacation.
So.
My son went back today too. My daughter starts school, starts nursery on Monday.
Oh.
But she has, they have like an open, like stay and play thing.
Right, right.
On, I think tomorrow. So technically, I guess tomorrow is like her first day, but I don't know, man.
One of the guys I was hanging out with at TI, Dakota, he's got a young kid and he was like, geez, it's just so much work and they're just around all the time. I was like, look, it does get better because school is amazing. Like once they start school, you've got so much more free time during the day. They've got stuff to talk about and you've got stuff to work on with on them. There's like so much more structure to just the day-to-day stuff. Like now the weekends or in the evenings, like right now they've got homework, we've got projects to do. It's just things to do because it is surprisingly hard to think of stuff to do with kids. Because, you know, they can't do anything really fun. They can't go to the pub with you and get drunk. They can't watch the cool movies you actually want to watch. They can't go to strip clubs. They can't smoke cigars. You know,
some kids do. There's some parents out there who are just like, I don't fucking care. I've got kids. They're coming to the strip club with me.
Yeah.
And they're going to smoke cigars as well.
Smoke cigars.
They've got
son.
Their own pile of dollar bills to shove down the G-strings and
put
everything.
Put some bucks in her titties. Right in the titties, son. Right in the middle. Right in the middle. No.
Break open that piggy bank.
No, he's okay. He's with me. He wants to put them right in your titties there. Just tuck them a good boy. Come on. Now, fetch daddy another cigar.
So what did you get up to?
What do you mean?
I want to know. Were you like actively... At dad entertaining? Why didn't you like send them to summer camp or something? Because that's what my parents did.
Well, I'll tell you why. And I know Mrs. Flax listens to the podcast. She straight up fucked up. She booked the wrong week. So we had summer camp booked. She booked it by the wrong month. So they were meant to spend a week of the holidays at summer camp, which is like 8:30 till 5:30 every day. I was like, awesome. I'll stream all day. It'll be great. No problems. And the day before, she's like, I messed up. I booked it the previous month. So I was like, you're kidding me. So I got back from China, or from YogCon maybe, and I was expecting them to be going to camp. And I had them for the whole week. I was devastated. I was devastated.
Man.
Because I was looking forward to it so much.
Do your kids like summer camp?
No, but they're fucking going.
No, mine are petrified of it. It's like active threat, like when, you know, you get those days where you go out and stuff and they get
active
more.
Active threat.
Yeah, they get more and more excited.
It's like the US generals. We got an active threat coming. Yeah. Summer camp.
Summer
what
camp.
Are we going to do?
They start listening less and less, and like they get carried away or whatever. Yeah. That's when we bust out the summer camp. Oh, well.
Summer camp.
You know, they're not listening. I'm just going to have to phone up the summer camp and say, do you have space for two more people? Because we're going to have to put them in. No!
I mean, here's the thing.
No!
No! I would never put them in the one where they have to sleep over, because I hated that when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I hated that. And... this was just like all day and it was great. But yeah, we've done it previous years, but Mrs. F made a mistake. It's all right. It happens, love.
I think I enjoyed it like initially, but I think it got boring because it was the same old shit day after day.
Well, once they're there, they love it. Like I picked them up and like, daddy, we did all this amazing stuff. And they've made things. They've been swimming. And they've been go-karting. And it's like, it's a really awesome camp. Like it's really fun and they love it. But before they go, they're like, because they just want to stay home and play video games. They're my kids. So, you know, I can relate to that. But
I think that's what I wanted to do when I was
You just want to stay home.
Did you want to try and like put on dad camp? Like, can you imagine if you were like scout leader type material?
Are you fucking kidding
me? And
you
just got your shorts
that's
on.
That's a fucking nightmare. Are you crazy?
Why the fuck would you do
and
that?
And you just ran. You were like, all right, kids, welcome to dad camp. Okay, first thing we're going to do is dig up this old tree stump in the garden. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, give them jobs around the house.
I can just about handle being around my own kids that I made with my own man syrup a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around other people's kids at all.
Yeah.
Like I don't want
I'm not suggesting you bring in like neighborhood kids. I'm suggesting it's just you, kids, portage, or like, I don't know, doing
our
like,
own kids.
Oh, right.
Do you dream of like being like that kind of outdoorsy dad?
No.
Like, is that a thing that you're keen to do, or is that something you want to avoid at all costs?
It's actively avoid being that dad.
Like the plague. Avoid, avoid, avoid.
It's a long game that you got to play. You can't burn yourself out quickly. Activities and stuff like that, only if you're really, really pressed.
Yeah.
You're having like a especially difficult day. That's when you bust out like the paints or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't just bust out the paints first thing. That's crazy. You got to be crazy.
You've got to have a backup.
It's messy. You know, it requires you to like stand up and stuff. Fuck that.
You know, Batman, he always has stashes of bat equipment around Gotham, right? He always has them stashed just in case he needs them. It's like a reserve. Spider-Man does the same thing. He secures Spidey's kits around New York just in case. Dad stuff is like that. Like, I feel like I need a backup so that when they're really losing their minds, I'm like, right, let's make some bead necklaces. They're like, it's like, cool.
We're the same.
You don't open with that. You save your best material for when you know the previous few jokes have bombed. You go to the A material in the back of your pocket. That's the plan there.
Yeah, we've got Batman survival kits like all over our house. There's always something. Like, my wife's really good. She'll get something. Like, we'll be on vacation or whatever, and she'll buy something. And I'll be like, oh, fuck, why did you buy that? Like, it's, you know, it's so much fucking hassle or super messy or whatever. And she's like, no, they're not using it now. I'm saving this for like, you know, when we do this or when we go here or whatever. And fuck, that's a really good idea. You know what I mean? Like, just to like keep them off your back for a bit, or like, you know, for like a long plane journey or something.
Can we just give a round of applause to mums everywhere? Because dads don't think of that shit.
Dads, ladies, don't. Dads are just like in like meltdown mode all the time, right?
We're ready for the panic shit, you know, like,
yeah, that's right.
A kid's broken a leg or something. Bam. Then I'm ready to go. But if it's like, how do you entertain them for 2 hours? Like, don't know. Netflix? You're like,
I'm the same. It's like, here, can you entertain the kids for 2 hours? And you're like, yeah, okay, sure. That sounds great. And then your wife leaves and you're like, all right, kids, let's watch a movie. And then they're like, no. We want to play like a fort building with, you know, hybrid hide and seek and this. And you're like, oh, what?
Yeah. Jeez, you mean I have to be involved? Come on.
Physical games.
Yeah. That's not sitting down and watching a movie, kids. Yeah.
I mean, that's like the kind of thing they did before movies, right? They did like the parlor games. Like, I remember my parents used to have this old book full of like parlor games that you could play. And they were, it was one of these kind of dusty old, like, it looked like a fucking antique, but it was full of
way to talk about your parents, Lewis.
Stupid, these like sardines and stuff like that, you know, things that, and charades and like, I don't know, just weird little things.
I think I remember seeing a book like this on a grandparents' shelf, and half the games were fucking awful, like really boring.
They're all really weird as well.
And speaking of board games, we bought, while we were away, we went to Center Parks in Longleat for like the 20th time for a week this summer. It's really nice though. Like, the kids really like it and stuff. And like, we're familiar with it, so we know the kind of things that we want to do or whatever. And it was raining one day and we picked up Travel Battleship. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I played Travel Battleship with my son. I was really surprised at, over the years, how good I'd become at Battleship. Because I have a firing pattern, I have strategy, I've got like a layout strategy for my ships and stuff. Man, my son does not have any of that, okay? Like, his technique is he just clears row by row by row by row.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
It's just like, and at first, like the first game we played, he got a hit on one row, but he just kept going with the strategy. He didn't even follow up the hit to try
like
to sink the ship.
Like machine learning.
So I had to like explain to him, I was like, if you get a hit, you got to find the boat. Like, you know, you got to sink ships in this game. And then like a couple games later, he was like, you know, he had like a better strategy and stuff, but he still wasn't doing like the diagonal, like firing pattern, leaving spaces in between. Cause you got to find that little like PT boat, right?
Oh,
the two circle one, like the small one.
The twosie. Because
that's the fucker. That's the one that always
the one that'll get you.
Survives. Yeah. So You got to start off as you mean to go on with like a really tight firing pattern. Try to nail that bastard. And I was really, really surprised at just how logical and efficient.
Dominating you were.
Dominating, yeah. I let him win the first game, though. I felt bad. So I was like, man. I gave him a couple of hints.
That must have taken fucking ages if he was doing the old scan and
There was an element of that too. It was late and it was approaching bedtime and everybody was tired. So I was like giving him hints, but it was his first game. So he wasn't following up the hits still.
That's so funny.
I was like, yeah, it was right, man.
I mean, Battleship is as a game, possibly the simplest.
Yeah, it's a good introductory game for a small kid, right?
I think so. I feel like Scrabble would be difficult, you know, for a four-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, Hungry Hippos is, I mean, that's a physical game.
The problem with that is the balls get everywhere. Like, you're going to lose them. We had it for a week, and then every single ball was lost. They're probably still in the house somewhere, but it's frustrating.
Yeah.
We were going to try to get Monopoly and Cluedo, but I don't know. I think it would have been a stretch. Also, Monopoly is like a bit of a...
Monopoly is the worst game of all time.
Family breaker.
And Cluedo's just fucking sucks.
Cluedo does suck. I forgot like how bad it sucked, actually.
I recommend Agricola. That's a fun game.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a resource placement.
It's a bit grindy.
Yeah, it's just farming. You just get a little farm. You get pigs, you get sheep. It's great. Everyone has fun, and then at the end, someone wins, but it's not like you're losing along the way. You're having fun building your farm up regardless. And all right, you know, the other farm might be fancier and that person might win, but you still got a sick little farm at the end of it with pigs and sheep and cows. Just saying.
There's lots of good games that you can play these days, like Small World's really good, stuff like that, like you said though, PFLAX, where everyone is in it till the end. That's the key with a board game, like not to knock people out along the way, because that just sucks.
Oh, by the way, my kids, I got a Steam account for my kids. They're playing House Flipper. I think you've played it, Sips, haven't you?
Yeah,
they love it.
So do I, man. They that love game is it. Awesome.
If they like House Flipper, add that to the dad camp. Like, today, kids, we're gonna tidy
flipper
up the garage.
You're gonna flip
we're
the
gonna
house,
lay a floor,
just like House
we're gonna
Flipper.
Plaster the walls,
but for real. Man. Yeah.
Welcome to Dad Camp, and it's just in this shitty cockroach infested house that you're like, do you have, like, play House Flipper? Time to do it IRL, baby. Get to work.
I bought the house across the way. It's a disaster zone. Get clean.
God, they're gonna love it.
I want this wall knocked through, kids. All right, I want this knocked through.
Make sure it's not load bearing though. Just
don't
make
forget
sure
to put the steel in. That's very heavy. Man.
Right, you're gonna be staying over as well, and I'm gonna go home and play Dota.
Man.
Good luck. Here's two cigars.
Speaking of Dota, I went to China. I went to China for 10 days.
That's right. Yeah. How did that go? How was TI 9? I heard that the next one's going to be in Stockholm.
It's going to be in Stockholm, baby.
That's crazy.
It's going to be hype. We got to go to that. So China is pretty much the last place I ever want to return to. It's not a fun place to be. And I'm honestly, TI was good. But China is just too much, man. It's just, it's not, it's too different. It makes too little sense. They've got, you know, the government there is a bit questionable, to say the least. And it's just weird, man, living under that kind of regime. You're not used to it in Britain. You're not used to being censored, having things denied you, like the internet and stuff like that. There's a palpable lack of freedom, and coming from the freedom-loving West, it's very disconcerting to go there. So I found it quite difficult.
They didn't have freedom fries or anything over there?
No freedom fries, censorship on the internet.
I mean, you had a VPN though,
yeah,
right?
But the fact is, everybody has one. And you think, why am I living in a country where I need a VPN just to see the news? You know what I mean? Like, Twitch is banned. Like, you can't watch Twitch without a VPN. And Google is banned. And you just think, this isn't right. Like, it doesn't feel right. I'm not used to that in Europe or America. You're just not used to it. So when you go somewhere like that and spend that amount of time there, it messes with you. And it really unsettles you. And you realize how many people are probably living that way around the world, and it's disconcerting.
Yeah.
Like it really is. And I'm just there for 10 days and then I'm going home. But it's troubling to be there and to think of all those, a billion plus people living like that. I mean, you know, they do all kinds of fucked up shit. It's just horrible. So there was that. And there was also the fact that your average Chinese person doesn't understand queuing at all.
Well, okay, now we're at the real crux of the issue.
That isn't something specific to China. That is just human nature.
No,
like,
but
it's
very
crazy.
This is very China. Because my friend who I was there with, Ken, he's from China. And his parents, when they're in China, do the exact same thing. They cut in line like nobody's business. So there was a queue of six people waiting to get ice cream.
God, that drives me nuts.
But it's so accepted. So we're queuing up there to get ice cream at the ice cream bit in the restaurant in the hotel. It was a big buffet restaurant. You have everything you want. There was all different stations you could go to. And we're queuing up for ice cream, and this little old lady comes up, just cuts, steps straight in front. One chocolate ice cream, please. And the guy serving the ice cream just gives her the ice cream and off she goes. Nobody says a word. And after 10 days of that, I was cutting. I was just going, fuck this, I'm doing it. So there'd be a line of people, just straight up to the front. 1 minute ice cream, please, and they give it to you. Nobody's like, sir, there's a queue. Like, there's just no concern. Man, I was just I'm going
you
all
embrace
in.
The culture.
I go to my fullest George Costanza when that happens, when somebody cuts. Because I just think it's so true. We fucking live in a society. What are you doing? Like, nobody got the memo that you were leaving your fucking house today and that everybody had to fucking clear the path for you to like get up to the counter first and everything. Like,
well, they all do
what
it, buddy.
The fuck, it's crazy.
They all do it, and they just don't give a shit. It's weird, which says to me that's a lack of concern for other people. Like, fundamentally, that's what that means, is I don't care about everybody else.
I mean, I got some respect for somebody who just doesn't give a shit and doesn't even try to hide it. The ones that drive me the most nuts are the people who pretend to be completely oblivious to the fact that they're you know, like, there's quite clearly a massive fucking line. And surprise, somehow it's orderly as well.
Yeah.
And then you just get that guy who's wearing like red pants and he's got red pants and like penny loafers and it has sunglasses and like a fucking straw hat or something on.
He's,
you know what
straight,
I mean?
He's cutting straight to the front of that fucking
and
line.
He goes right up to the front of the line with that stupid fucking face where he's just like, I've never been out in public before. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, get in the fucking back of the line. You're not Jesus. Like, what are you fucking doing?
Jesus
up there?
Wouldn't cut. Jesus
no,
would wait.
Of
he
course
would wait.
He wouldn't. He would not. Jesus would not. He would wait patiently.
Here's another thing that would now drive listen. You crazy. Hold on. Is this about queuing?
About cutting.
Yeah.
No, go for it. Go for it.
Okay. This is about Jobsworths, which is another thing I hate. And China is full of people who are Jobsworths, right? So
what does that mean?
It means they do their job to the letter. And if you ask them to do anything outside it, they won't. And if they have a rule to follow, regardless of how inane that rule is, they will follow it to the letter because it's more than their job's worth to do otherwise, right? Now, part of this must be about coming from communist China and that the literally you did your job and nothing more, nothing less, because that was the way you did things to keep your head down and stay under the radar.
It's like malicious compliance,
exactly,
isn't it?
So, for example, this is a prime example. We needed to get a shuttle from the hotel we were staying in to the place we were working. It was about a 20-minute shuttle right away, and they just waited outside the hotel and they went on the hour. We were going to get the 9 o'clock shuttle, 9 p.m. shuttle to go start work, because we tend to start after, you know, about 10:30, sometimes later. Our show went on at the end of the day. So it's 8:45. We're like, cool, we haven't missed the last shuttle. We go downstairs. We say to the girl at the desk, is there a 9 o'clock shuttle? She says, yes. So we go over to the shuttle place. There's the shuttle with the name of the hotel we're going to on at Intercontinental. We say to the driver, Intercontinental. He says, yeah. So we get on. He turns on the bus, turns on the air conditioning. We sit on the bus. We're waiting. 15 minutes, we're waiting on the bus. It gets to 9 o'clock. He turns off the engine, stands up, waves his hands, and gets off the bus. He'd finished at 9. That was it. He'd finished at 9, so there's no more shuttles. Why did he let us on the shuttle, turn on the engine, turn on the AC? I'll tell you why. Because if he told us, no, I'm finishing at 9, it's then his problem to help us find another shuttle, or to at least tell us where we're meant to go. So he plays it right by Chinese rules. You wait until your time is up and you dust your hands and you get the fuck out of there. That is exactly what he did.
Oh,
he disappeared as soon as it was 9 o'clock. Gone. So we went back into the lobby and said to the girl at the desk there, there was like a desk for the Chinese production at TI. We said to her, the shuttle guy finished. She went, and she's putting on her coat and bag. And she's like, yeah, it's 9 o'clock. He's finished. I am too. See ya. Bam. She's out the door. So we go up to the 9th floor, which is like the last remaining desk. It's like the 24-hour desk to support everyone in the hotel who's there for TI. We go to the Chinese girls up there and we're like, the shuttle that was meant to go at 9, the guy said it was finished. He goes, oh yeah, he's finished at 9. You need to go to the first floor. And I was like, no. I was like, I put my hands down the desk, like, no. I said, listen to me. She told us she'd finished. You need to get us to that hotel. We have to start work. We need help. And she was like, all right. Picked up a phone and reluctantly made a phone call and palmed us off onto someone else. That was as much as she would do. She was not going to help us. She was going to get someone else to handle it. And they do that in China all the time. You ask someone for help and they'll say, yeah, I'll get right on that. Steve, get right on that. And they're like, yeah, cool, I helped you. So that's like that
it's
everywhere.
It's a combination of it's not worth you know, it's more than your job's worth, but it's a combination of just fucking laziness as well.
That is a glorious power move, though, really. It's like someone comes to you with a problem and you say, don't worry.
Yeah.
Steve will help you with this problem. And then suddenly, you know, you can just smile and look at them placidly while Steve is like a dog.
Yeah.
You know,
Steve has no fucking idea.
How's Steve going to help me? You know, but they've alleviated themselves of the problem.
You get a lot of that in big companies, like especially I find like most of the big companies I've worked for, like banks and stuff like that. You get a lot of that. Like you'll go over to a team and you'll be like, and it's their responsibility, like that, you know, this certain thing or whatever. And you go over and you're like, yeah, this isn't working. It's not working for this reason. You know, like what do we need to do about this? And then they're like, oh, well, we'll just ask. We'll get this person to sort it out. It's like, well, you're meant to fucking sort it out. If you can't fucking sort it out, why are you in this fucking job? Just to say that somebody else is going to sort it out? Like, I could have just gone to him directly. I didn't need to come to you first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't even know. Like, fuck, it amazes me. Like, I know I say it a lot, but fuck, I don't understand how these companies even make money. Like, it's stupid. They just have all of these people that just don't do shit.
Yeah, it's like just a bureaucracy.
They're incapable of even doing their jobs. Like, their job is to just get somebody else to do their job. It blows my mind every time.
It is crazy. But so for another example is when we went to the hotel restaurant, we had to get a little voucher to say we were with TI and that, you know, it was paid for. Otherwise, you need to pay. We'd go to the ninth floor and we had to get a lunch voucher. We got a little voucher. We go back down to the restaurant on the second floor, go for lunch. Now, you had to get one for dinner as well, but they wouldn't give you the one for lunch and the one for dinner at the same time. You had to come up for lunch and you had to come up again for dinner, and there was no reason at all other than someone hadn't told them to just give the vouchers to people when they need them. You know, oh, you just give them lunch and dinner at the same time, no problem. So every single day we'd be like, oh, let's go get some dinner. I'm like, fuck, we're going to go up to the ninth floor. They would not deviate from this at all. Even if you were like, look, you see us every day. Can you just give us the two vouchers now so we don't have to come up here again? No. And then they brought in the system where you have to sign your name and tick a box to say that you've taken the lunch voucher and then do the same thing again when you come up for the dinner voucher. We were like, what is the point in this form? Who cares? They're like, we have to do it. They told us to do it. It's like, fine. So they were keeping tabs on it. But they only did it for 3 days, and then that just went in the bin. So what was the point in the paperwork? What was the point in the ticking and writing and naming? And then there were like three different numbers on this ticket, and it was stamped. Someone had put some official stamp on it. It's just pure bureaucracy, and nobody, everybody washing their hands of any kind of responsibility. No one thinks for themselves. That was my summary of what it was like in China.
I feel like that is experience that I've had at events loads of times too, though, right? Whenever you're going away with some kind of corporate thing, there's always a load of corporate drones on there, and they're all giving you all this exact same shit, you know, that you go and fucking queue up, and there's some, you know, asshole in a fucking looking like a dumbass who looks like just enough of a dumbass and behaves just enough of a dumbass that you could possibly forgive him for cutting in the front of that queue. But there's about a 50-50 chance he is a dumbass and that he knows that he can get away with it because he's done it before. And so he just sees a queue and he's like, I'm just going to chance this, you know. And if someone calls me on it, I'll just act like a dumbass. And, you know, but there's a good chance they're not going to call it. You know, I feel like that though, we see those people in America. We see those people in the UK, but they exist. Like this same bureaucracy bullshit exists in our country too. Like, I don't think it's in China. I think if you're staying in hotels with a corporate sponsor,
this was different.
With people who are terrified of losing their job for like, or being told off by someone, you know, up a ladder.
I've done this at other places. Like I've worked all over the place, and I've never seen bureaucracy like it is in China. There's no reasonableness. There's no reasoning. There's no pleading. There's no, could you just help me out here? None of it. If they have not been told specifically that this is a thing they can do, they will not do it. So for example, the bar that we were shooting in every night for the show, we were this little bar. It was the same barmaid every single night and the same bar manager. There were always like five of them behind the bar. Only one of them would ever serve drinks. I don't know what the other guys were there for. The girl was the only one to serve drinks. The rest of them just stood around. Occasionally she'd confer with them and then she'd get you your drink. I don't know what was going on. We were in there one day slightly early, and there's a coffee machine and some water on the bar, right? For the people putting the shoot together if they want it. She will not serve drinks until after 9 o'clock. Not for licensing reasons, but because they've been told that they serve coffee and water until 9 and then drinks after that. And I'm like, we need the beers for the show because we're going to go live. We need them as props because we start the show with a beer. She's like, no, we can't do it till 9 o'clock. I was like, why? She goes, because it's the coffee machine and the water until 9 o'clock. I said, so it's not like a licensing thing or hotel rules or anything. She's like, no, but we do water and coffee till 9 o'clock. I was like, right, I understand that, but I need a beer. She's like, no, I can't, not till 9 o'clock. It was 5 to 9. So I'm like, cool. So we just stood there for 5 minutes. And then I said, can I have a beer, please? She goes, well, I've got to clear the coffee and the water stuff away first. I was like, can you just give us a beer? She was like, no, can't do it. So she had to take the coffee machine off and put that away, very slowly take all the bottles of water off and put them somewhere. And then she was able to serve me my beer. I've never seen anything like that. It's such a minor thing. It's not really important. It doesn't really bother me, but it's just... it's so fucking petty that it feels personal. You feel personally attacked.
That does bother me, actually. That's like a Karen just being a real... that is malicious compliance,
exactly.
Though.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
But there's no reason. And also, she never recognized us. It was me and Dakota were the same two people in the bar every night. And they knew that we were on a tab. We were on Valve. Was
I mean,
paying
you're
for the
fairly
beer.
Iconic looking.
I'm the only bald guy she sees all day. Probably, right? I mean, there were hardly any other bald people. You don't see many bald people in China. I'm not being funny. There just aren't many bald people in China. And I'm like, glasses, bald, tall, loud English bloke. And she was like, every single time, she was like, who are you? I was like, come on, love. You must, come on. I've ordered like 20 beers from you over the last 5 days. Surely you must realize it's me. I still had to go and get the Valve guy to just nod, and then she would give me the beer on the tab. I had to find a Valve employee to go, please just give him the beer. They're like, yep, okay. I was like, come on. It was ridiculous.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like that the whole time. Like one time I went to get my lunch voucher. I didn't have my badge with me. And it was this girl had given me lunch and dinner vouchers for 10 days. I go up there and she's like, you don't have your badge. I was like, yeah, but you know me. Can I just have my lunch voucher? Sorry, you need your badge. I was like, what do you think? I've been fired or what? Why do you think I just forgot my badge. Can I please have my lunch voucher? No, we have to give them to badge holders. I was like, so you're just saying you don't know who the fuck I am? There's 20 vouchers deep in our relationship and you refuse to give me a voucher. What's the worst that can happen? I get lunch. Come on.
I'm so on board with this, actually. I could listen to you like rant, mold. You're molding. That's what you are all day.
Molding. Just. I saw that word the other day. I thought that was quite funny.
It is a good word.
I've got one. Okay, listen to this one. And this one didn't take place in China either. This one took place in the beautiful country of France. Okay, are you ready for this one?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
So there I am at Disneyland Paris. Okay, with my family. My whole family is there. My daughter was like pretty small at the time. My son was like was much younger at the time as well. Me and my wife are there. And we got regrettably, and we'll never do it again. We got the shuttle transfer bus from the airport to the Disneyland Resort. It's like meant to be the start of your magical journey through Disney.
Yeah,
a bus from the airport. It's got like Mickey Mouse on the side, and you can watch a Disney movie like on the bus because it takes like an hour to get there and stuff. And like my kids were pretty excited. They're like, oh great, you know, take the bus, whatever, blah blah blah. So we get there, we do Disney and everything. But when we booked it, for whatever reason, we were meant to be flying out of Paris Charles de Gaulle, mm-hmm. the airport, right? And then, but of course, in Paris, there's another airport. There's Orly Airport, or Orly, like, you know, the stupid owl.
Right.
So there's two airports, right?
Yeah.
We're flying out of Charles de Gaulle, okay? But for some reason, on our shuttle ticket, it said Orly Airport, okay? Which we were not meant to be going to. So this wasn't a problem coming in. You know, we got on the bus. We were like, oh, hey, you know, we're off to Disney, but our ticket said that we should be getting it from Orly Airport, but we, you know, the booking agent or whatever just said, just to mention it to you. So the guy was like, yeah, cool. Get on the bus. Like, let's go, sort of thing. So off we go. On the way back, where we were waiting for the bus, and we were kind of like pressed for time as well, because we were a bit late getting out and everything. And we had to get this like one specific bus so that we could get to the airport on time. And it was this, it was just this woman who had just the face of a Jobsworth. You know, you can almost see them from like a mile away. Like you could just tell, like just by their demeanor and stuff, that they're just like that type of person or whatever. So she's like, she lumbers over and she's, you know, she's barking at people and she's asking for tickets and stuff. And so I go up and I say, oh yeah, we're going to Charles de Gaulle. Like give her the ticket. She's like, no, you're not. That says Orly on it. It's like, yeah, I know, but like it, there was a booking problem or whatever, or they got it wrong. And they said to just mention it to you guys and that it's not a problem. You know, it's just another airport. Like, who cares, right? She's like, no, I can't take you. Your ticket says Orly on it. What's the difference? Like, it's just another airport. Like, I had to like reason with her and everything. And then she's like, I have to call my manager. She was like all in a big huff about it. She was like super annoyed and mad. And she's on the phone for like 20 minutes and the whole bus is delayed and everything. And then she comes back and she doesn't even say anything. She just grabs the ticket and just starts stamping it because I guess her boss just said to her, like, the fuck is your problem? Like, who cares? It's just another airport. Like, just take them or whatever. And I guess she lost that battle.
Right.
So it was our fault that she'd been vanquished in her weird fucking battle of principles or justice in the world or whatever. And then she wouldn't speak to us for like the rest of the time and stuff.
Good fucking riddance, pal. That's what I say.
How do you become such a piece of shit? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
What fucking happens in your stupid, scummy life to make you such a cunt? Like, what?
I mean, if you hate your job, I get it. I've had jobs I hated, but you don't take it out on other people.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to make you feel better unless, and this is why I don't regret calling these people pieces of shit, unless the only way you can make yourself happy in a miserable job is by treating other people like shit. If that cheers you up, fuck you. I don't give a shit how bad your job is. If your only release is torturing customers and being a cunt, fuck off. Get another job on the sun and burn to death. Well, you piece of shit.
If you're
garbage, cockroach, bastard, fuck.
If you're miserable in that job, you fucking deserve it, you piece of shit. Stay in it. Just be a sad, miserable, fucking bastard. Shit stain on this planet, you piece of shit.
Ugh,
fuck you.
Burn in hell, yeah. Fuckers.
To like give a perspective though, like imagine earlier in that day, she'd like been shown a ticket to like, you know, Orly Airport, whatever, right? By another dumbass family.
I knew you'd take a side, Lewis.
Red trouser wearing idiots pushing in front.
He's got
right?
the fucking
with their
straw
stupid
hat
kids.
And the glasses. And
they're annoying kids. They're like fucking crying and yelling and spitting and covered in like chocolate and just like all sticky fingered and they're sneezing your face and they're making it all gross. You've put up with this the whole fucking day and your boss is being an asshole to you and you take them and imagine they were like, oh yes, we need to go to this airport. And so you look at their ticket and it says, oh well, no, it says Orly Airport. And they're like, oh no, we need to go to Charles de Gaulle. So you take the Charles de Gaulle and then they're like, what are you doing? The ticket says Orly Airport. Why did you take us here? And you were like, well, that's where you told me to take you. And they were like, no. No, you're an idiot. You took us to the wrong one, and then you get in trouble.
The dumb thing, though, is it's a big bus. There was like five people on it. She could have just stopped and picked up anybody along the way, and nobody would have cared or noticed or anything. You know what I mean? Like who fucking cares where you're going? Like, if somebody wants to run on the bus, just let them get on the fucking bus. Even if it's the wrong bus, who cares? It's up to them, right? Like,
amen, brother.
Jesus.
Amen.
I actually get it. Like, I used to work in a bar. And, you know, not for very long, obviously, when I was like 16 or something. And I was just giving people free drinks. I was terrible.
Yeah, but you're the opposite of the problem. We're saying that's cool.
Yeah.
Fight the power.
Yeah.
You know, give people the free drinks. Yeah. Accept the wrong
ticket.
I was
a terrible employee.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Because in the arcane bureaucracy of whatever vast corporation you're working for, you're just a drop in the ocean, man. No one gives a shit. It's not like they're going to say, hang on a second. Someone gave someone a free cider.
Surely the karma bank alone is going to come back and reward you at some point, right? Like the more you just like are helpful towards people who are customers, like, you know, just like hook them up or whatever. Like, you know your limits, right? Like, you know, like if your boss is like the kind of guy who comes in and weighs like every spirit bottle and, you know, compares that to his profits and stuff like that. Okay, cool. Maybe don't give out free drinks or whatever. But like most people like don't do that, right? So you can get away with it. You might as well get away with it because who knows? You might hook up somebody who's like going to turn around and be like, oh, fuck, you're the best bartender. Here's a fucking $1,000 or something. Like, you know what I mean?
like in the Vino or something.
Yeah. And then you get $1,000 and you're like, well, fuck this job. I'm a millionaire now. I'm out of here.
Because you can't do maths.
Oh, man.
Oh, all right. So I went to hospital a couple of nights ago, right?
Serious?
Yeah. I was there for 2 hours, a grand total of 2 hours before I got an Uber home. So it wasn't that bad, but it was fucking scary. So here's what happened. You guys know I've talked about my heart thing before,
yeah.
Right? Where my heart is crazy. Yeah. So this was 2 nights ago. So it's Tuesday night. Tuesday night. Just drifting off to sleep, and I start to get this feeling like if I go to sleep, I'm gonna forget how to breathe. Like my body's like I keep feeling like I have to deliberately breathe. Like my body isn't naturally just doing it. You know the way you're not thinking about it and you're breathing. So every time I'm drifting off to sleep, I'm catching myself awake, like really suddenly. Not like that thing where you feel like you're falling, which is, I can't remember what they call that reaction. Someone out there will instantly have said it, but there's a reaction. Sometimes when you fall in a sleep, you'll wake up really with a start like you were falling. Have you ever had that before?
Yeah, yeah. You just like, right. You do like that, like weird, like
you go, huh!
You
like
flail
that,
sort of, in yeah. bed sort of.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It wakes you up enough to know that you've done it sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So if it was like that, but instead of feeling like I was falling, the feeling was, oh my God, I'm not breathing. So I started to really freak out. And I started to feel my pulse rate going up and it felt like it was fluttering all over the place. And I started to feel nauseous and dizzy. And I thought, oh my God.
You're having a panic attack.
Right. But I thought I was having a heart attack. So I've never had a panic attack in my life. Nothing even close. Didn't have a stressful day. Nothing.
Textbook panic attack, right?
As I've subsequently found out. So I said to Mrs. F, I think I'm having a heart attack. You better call the ambulance. I actually thought my vision was like tunneling. I honestly thought I was about to fucking die.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to happen.
It's horrible.
Yeah, you're going to work yourself up to that
exactly.
horrible experience.
So because of the fucking heart stuff I'd had before, I thought, right, third time's a charm. Instead of just like a SVT attack, it's going to be a fucking full-on heart attack. I thought, this is it.
Shit.
So I was really panicked. I was terrified. The ambulance turns up. They put the EKG meter on me. I've got fucking shaved patches on my chest again. And the guy looks at me and he says, what do you think your heart rate is right now? I said, God, it must be like a million. And he said, it's perfectly normal. I was like, what do you mean? And they printed out some of the EKG and said, look. And I was like, what the fuck? I said, I honestly thought it was going crazy. He said, look, I'm not going to say that it's not nothing. We're going to take you in and they're going to do blood tests. But it looks like a panic attack. I was like, what do you mean a panic attack? I've never had a panic attack in my life. Like, what am I panicking
about?
Man,
maybe it was just like, maybe it was just residual like rage panic from that woman in China.
From that fucking ticket.
And not serving you your beers.
You were telling your wife about all the queuing and the bureaucracy.
Maybe it just caught up. Maybe it all subconsciously just caught up with you. You know, you're just like.
Man, I tell you what, it really shook me up. Like the whole yesterday, I was like really wobbly. And then I keep thinking about it. And every time I think about it, I think I'm going to have another one. But now I know what it is. I feel like I've got a bit more control over it. And I told my mates on WhatsApp, I was like, lads, I went to hospital, I had a fucking panic attack. And two of them, there's only eight of us in this chat. Two of them have had them. One of them has had several.
Jeez.
I was like, what? And Mrs. F told me another guy that she knows has had them. I was like, what is it with these things? Like, is this something that happens? And I guess maybe we just don't talk about it, or people don't understand what it's like. But it was fucking horrible. It was really horrible.
Yeah.
I was actually thought it was my final hours. It was so grim.
Well, that feeling is very familiar to me as an asthma attack and will be familiar to a lot of people as an asthma attack. Because an asthma attack is very similar. Like, you feel like you can't breathe and that develops very quickly into a panic attack. They're very similar in the way they affect you. You know, you feel like... You feel like you're going to die. You know, and it's very stressful. And a lot of the time, you know, sometimes if it's brought on by something that's not physical, like asthma attacks are brought on by this physical tightening in your chest. And since the medication relieves that, it's a very quick snap out of it. You know, whereas like I think these anxiety attacks, like I definitely have had them over the last couple of years at various points. And I think everyone... shouldn't be ashamed, or you shouldn't feel less macho because you've had one or whatever. No, absolutely not.
I didn't think
not.
Of myself as macho anyway, but now that you put it that way,
nice.
I am pretty macho.
No, but you know what I mean? It does feel like, you know, you're obviously a strong dad.
I'm absolutely not ashamed of it. I'm happy to talk about it. It's just, it's weird because I feel like the part for me is whenever I've heard the words panic attack in the past, I thought, oh, fucking grow up. What are you panicking about? I didn't realize that it was literally an attack on your body.
Yeah.
Like your mind and your body are fucking completely disunited and freaking out, and your body is responding as if something awful is happening. Like I've never had that kind of, it's like a complete psychosomatic breakdown where your body is like, oh my God, I'm nauseous, I'm dying, I can't breathe, it's a heart attack. And the more you think about it and the more you panic about your symptoms, the worse it gets. So your brain is now fucking spiraling out of control. Your body, unbelievably, is doing the same thing. Normally, your body is just perfectly chill, and it's only external influences that cause it alarm. But instead, this is like your brain is making your body freak out and you have no control
over
it.
It's like an animal thing, though. What happens is, like, you are convinced that something is wrong in your mind. Like, it's like the classic thing of if someone gave you, like, poison and said, you've just eaten poison, you'd be like, oh my fucking God, I feel sick. And then you'd puke, right? It'd be like a physiological response to something mental, okay? In the same way, even if they hadn't given you poison, you'd still feel nauseous and puke. And then they'd be like, well,
gotcha.
It's the same thing with you think something's wrong with you, and your body has the only reaction is that it's anxious, fear, adrenaline thing leading you to like run. It's like the flight response kind of thing that appears. And I think that we're animals really who have been given this higher brain function that doesn't really gel with the primal brain. And so when you got told that your heart was fine, you were like, oh, okay, maybe there's nothing to, what am I panicking about? And then that snapped you out of it. I don't think that there is always a way to snap out of it at all. Like, I think some people have them for no reason.
My mum immediately said, have you got a paper bag in the house? She goes, of course, it's really hard to get paper bags these days. Like, there was some breakdown of society in the literature. You know, modern life means there's no blooming paper bags anymore, even though the paper bags
are
all over the
place. It's that guy with the red pants and the fucking straw hat.
He's taking all the fucking paper bags?
We've outlawed paper bags in this country. No.
But she said, you got to breathe into that. Get out of the way. My hands were going numb and like tingly. And that's because I'd massively over-oxygenated my blood by taking these big heaving breaths, which is making things even worse.
That's right.
So and he said your oxygen level in your blood is like 100%. Like, you've got all the oxygen you need and your heart is fine. What do you think the problem is? I was like, I have no idea. But it was really fucking, I felt like such an idiot. But he was like, don't feel stupid, because everything that your body and your brain was telling you was, this is bad. And the doctor that looked at me said, oh, they did the blood test, you're like, you're fine. But he said, never hesitate to come in. Because like, from their perspective, what if I'm having a heart attack and I go, oh, it's just a panic attack. Bam, dead. You know what I mean? Like, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Oh, totally. Man. Totally.
Yeah.
I think you obviously got worked up about something and it spiraled out of control in the classic form.
I mean, we'd won a couple. We'd lost a game of CSGO. None of this is unusual to me. You know what I mean? I hadn't had a stressful day.
It might be
everything
like,
seemed fine.
It might be something. Pardon me, sorry. God, the kids are back to school. I had to wake up really early this morning. It's probably something like from way back that you just didn't deal with or something, and subconsciously you're processing.
Yeah, you realized you were like in China and you were queuing up for some like hot pot, and there was this asshole there, and
who should have recognized you,
and you just wanted a beer. You just wanted a fucking beer, and they were fucking around with a coffee machine, and then the taxi turned up, and it was gonna take you to the wrong airport.
Listen, you should do what my three-year-old daughter does, okay? Maybe this will help you in your life. My three-year-old daughter, while we were in Center Parks, actually did a full curb stomp beatdown, and not even jokingly, on a golf club.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was something else. It was crazy. We were playing mini putt, and she didn't know how to hold the putter or do anything or whatever.
So she lost her shit. Huh?
No, I did the dad thing. I stood behind her, held the putter with her, helped her putt and stuff, and she was like super happy. We're doing great putts. You know, we weren't sinking balls, but she was just happy to be able to get the ball away from like the start, closer to the hole or whatever.
Away from her.
And then so the ball would get down close to the hole. She'd run down like the green, the mini putt green, pick up the ball and put it in the hole. And that was like, to her, this is how you play the game and I'm winning, right? She was happy.
Wow.
So I was like, cool. So we get to hole number 8. Everybody's struggling with this hole. So we do our move, you know, stand behind her, lean over. We're both holding the putter, take the putt, fucking travels down the green beautifully, curves, bam, right in, hole in one, right? My wife is like going crazy. My son's like clapping. Everybody's cheering and everything. We're all so happy we managed to get this hole in one. Turn around and my daughter is fucking curb stomping, beating down this golf club on the side of the green.
Why?
Like angry as anything, because she wanted to run up, pick up the ball and put it into the hole.
Oh my God.
She didn't want.
Kids are nuts.
She didn't understand that a hole in one was a good thing. She thought we'd failed and was fucking pissed about it too.
Oh man. I love the way she just destroyed the golf club.
Man, that's that's what, I don't know where she gets it
you
from.
You see real like, sportsmen do that all the time.
I don't, I don't think I've ever been like that. My wife isn't like that either. Like, we're not, we don't like, you know, have like any violent, like lashing outs at objects or anything like that. But
maybe she's like Brightburn, dude. Did you see that movie? That movie sucked.
It was like Office Space, you know, when they do like that, the gangster beatdown of the fax machine out in the field.
Yeah.
It was like that. She was fucking going for it. She just like was so pissed off at this golf club. It was hilarious.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can we very briefly say YogCon was fucking awesome and I loved it and we should do it again?
Yeah, I think we said it last time we'd had a podcast, but it's fine. You could say
I
it
just
again.
Saw it on my calendar. Yeah. I was looking back to
it
see
it. It was
what
fun, actually. I've had a chance to process it all and stuff, and I got to say it was good. Everything went well. It was nice. It was a really good one.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's time to end the podcast. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. We've got a Patreon. You can support us if you like. You don't have to. Otherwise, see you next time.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye. Goodbye. Bye.